Okay, the first thing to do is always to acknowledge your partners. And I'm at the School of Public Health, which is the Health Science Center at Texas A&M. We have colleagues at Texas A&M main campus. This is a partnership between university and AgriLife Extension, but it's also between different universities. It's the two major universities in Texas, Texas A&M, and then University of Texas, and also with the Dell Center. So here are just some of the individual names in case you may know them, again, across campuses. The person who did a lot of the economic work is not here, but it's Omolo Adjopoju. And if you have any economic questions, she is ready to take an email. That's my disclaimer. Okay. The other disclaimer is the typical APHA one. We have no personal financial relationships to disclose. So you can see this is really a team effort. What is the purpose of the broader Texas Grow, Eat, Go study? Overall, we wanted to look at the efficacy of obesity prevention programs on the prevalence of child obesity, and we narrowed it down to school-aged children in the third grade, so around 8. We had a sub-goal with these analyses, and that is to look at what we know about the impact of obesity and then to estimate potential medical cost savings. What we're going to be talking about today is only the pilot study. We first did a pilot study on implementation and feasibility that will really sort of work out the mechanism that we will use as we get more people in our study. So what are these programs? How many people are familiar with CATCH? Perfect. So I ate a breakfast with Deanna Holscher at breakfast this morning, and she and her husband, Steve Kelder, have really been instrumental in working on CATCH. CATCH is now sort of mandated to be in every single school in Texas. The reality is there's a difference between, as we all know, mandated and implemented. But because of this, we use CATCH as the sort of baseline. So it's usual standard care around physical activity is CATCH. What we wanted to do is to add two different programs. Remember I said we're working with AgriLife. They do a lot with junior master gardening. How many people are familiar with that? Well, perfect. And so, but what they did is junior master gardener sort of teaches young children how to garden, but what they wanted to do was work more with gardens, and then they wanted hands-on demonstrations about veggie testing and recipe demonstrations. So it's more than just gardening, it's gardening and cooking and hands-on application. We also have a physical activity program that AgriLife has done, and that's called Walk Across Texas. And it's usually just done individually, and it's done in schools. But here we sort of expanded Walk Across Texas to include family engagement. And so we now have the programs that we're going to be testing in general are going to be looking at CATCH and then looking at the impact of the junior master gardening, and then looking at the impact of what and then all together. But because we're looking at pilot studies, we're going to really put everybody together and just look at pre-post. So let me just talk about some of the general behaviors. This gives you an idea, and we're working on our first couple of articles. When we look at child behaviors, what's interesting is we're looking at parent and adult behaviors, but then we're also looking at interactions, and that's what we think is so family-focused. We look at children, but then we look at their interactions with their parents or other adults, like teachers. We're also looking at some specific behaviors, fruit and vegetable consumption. We're looking at decreasing sweet and sugared beverages, increasing physical activity, and then decreasing sedentary activity. And you can see what we're looking at individually, and then if you look at the interactions, such as gardening together as a family or preparing snacks and healthy food together, engaging in family-oriented physical activity, and also eating those snacks and hopefully being as a family less sedentary. What we think this will do is ultimately lead to healthier kids. The economists say why this is also important is it's going to lower medical cost. So what are some of the methods for our particular study in general on this specific study? We have pre-post a study design with the control group, and again, the control group is the usual care, which is CATCH. For this study, we looked at one Title I public elementary school, and I assume everyone here knows what Title I schools are. They have a high proportion of free lunches, and so we are not going to schools in affluent areas, but we're going to schools that have a really high proportion of free lunch. We implemented in one third grade with just about 40 people, a little bit less. And we measure people in September, and then we come back and we're measuring again in May, at the end of the year. The measurements that we have are the anthropometric measures. We actually have one of those really fancy scales, so we're incredibly accurate to get pre-post measurements. We also are looking at BMI, and it sounds like almost everybody in the room understands. I'll have a slide about the difference between BMI in children as versus adults. Our data sources are from student measures, but we also have the medical expenditures panel data. Do people know what that is? That's a national data set which economists use. And it basically can tell you, it's sort of selected, but it tells you for different ages or different chronic conditions what the aggregate cost is across the country. So that's what an economist will use to be able to measure a cost. For the instrumentation, we had student surveys, and these were read by staff, and they were really easy and friendly, because you're talking about very young kids, and we spent a lot of time trying to get measurement appropriate for third graders. Have y'all had that difficulty before, trying to work with third graders? You basically have hand raising, you know, how did you get to school today? Did you walk? Did somebody drive you? So it's these kinds of measures. We had pretty extensive parent surveys, and then again, we have the BMI through height and weight. So, talking to the choir, but because BMI is one of our first measures, we just want to indicate that we did use gender-specific age percentiles for BMI. And so you can see the definitions of underweight to obese. And this is just an example for boys. So our analysis, we start off, as many people do, descriptively, where we're looking at the child characteristics, mean, proportion, standard deviations. This is what we'll do particularly as we get more data. Paired t-test, looking at BMI pre-post. And again, because we have so few people, we weren't able to differentiate the group that was in gardening versus the group that was in Watt versus the combined group. So everybody sort of put together as all intervention groups. For the cost estimates, we use the 210 data from the MEPS, where we sort of estimate these annual expenditures in the pre-post phases. And then what you'll see is we know what happens if you are a child at normal weight, and what we're doing is saying, what's the additional medical expenditures if you fall into either the overweight or the obese category? Okay, so here's just some baseline data. You'll see they're mostly 8 years old. There are some differences in the overweight and obese categories. You have males that are more represented in obese categories. Let me look at this. And you have a slightly different on overweight. We get pretty good representation of ethnicity. You'll see that obese kids, as you can imagine, are much less likely to be physically active. And then here you can see the cost, and let's sort of focus on that for a moment. If you see that the three different kinds of costs are pharmacy costs, ER visits, and outpatient visits, and you can see at each category that it obviously is going to cost you more if you're obese as relative to overweight, and the reference is being the normal weight. So sort of keep these numbers in mind. When you look at this, you can sort of see the movement of, you know, nine of the kids were normal to begin with and stayed normal. But you have sort of movement from people who were obese and then move into either the overweight or the normal category. And this is why there's sort of a significant decrease in obesity and in BMI over time. So you can see the sort of mean BMI level was 24.59, and it goes down at a significant level. When you look at medical expenditures, it's important to note that it's not significant, but look at the numbers that you'll see. The pre-mean number is $60, and the post is $52. So that's an incredible drop in cost. And imagine if you sort of aggregated that over every child, you'd get a large number. But because we have so few, it's not significant. So our economists actually ran a sensitivity analysis, and she said, what would the differential need to be, you know, because you saw it was sort of 60 to 52, what would it need to be significant, and it would need to drop $5 more. And so that's really not a lot in the long range, and so we feel as though this is very promising, that it's in the right direction. If we had more numbers, it would, you know, potentially be significant. So what's the sort of conclusions? Just what I said, that the Texas Grow, Eat, Go has the potential to produce significant reductions in BMI. But most importantly, what the pilot study did, what is it enabled us to look at the feasibility of the implementation of these three different programs. It allowed us to show the potential of reducing the number of children who were classified as either overweight or obese. This is just a pilot study, but again, it's encouraging because we do see reductions in cost, and we're optimistic and we'll be looking at the cost reductions when we go to full scale, and at that point we'll have over 1,000 students. One of the limitations, which is actually very conservative, is using the MEPS. Remember I said the MEPS are national data? We were in Title I schools, so we imagine that there's probably even greater healthcare costs for children from more disadvantaged backgrounds. So we think that the findings we have were really underestimated. So again, acknowledgement to the kids, to everybody here knows how hard it is to get into schools. It's critical to have principal support, teacher support. So we had lots of volunteers working with us, and we have our funding agency, USDA. For those people interested in some of the references, we included them. So thank you very much.
Thank you so much, Dr. Worry. Does anyone have any questions? We'll take one or two questions.
Great study. Stay tuned.
Okay.
I was going to say, great study. Stay tuned.
I have one that I wrote down. How can you, you have a lot of data, especially with the MEPS data, how can you leverage the scientific insights from this and all of the data that you have from this program along with the current trends and make it more innovative to basically translate as a blueprint in more rural areas.
Okay, so we actually used to be a school of rural public health, so rural is our middle name. And I think, and some of our schools are in more rural areas, so I think that what you need to do is look at what you find and what the applicability is. The nice thing about partnering with AgriLife is that they are in 250 of the 254 counties in Texas. And if this thing is shown to reduce BMI and reduce cost, you got to bet that county agents are going to be supporting these programs. They have really good relationships, and that's how we got in with principals and teachers. So in that sense, we need to wait for the results, but the infrastructure is already there to disseminate the findings, whether it's rural or urban. Good point.
Thank you.